Hi everyone, I'm Tammy.
And I'm Toby.
And this is
Totally On Brand.
Hey T.
Hi darling.
How you doing?
Why are you smiling?
I don't know.
Why are you smiling?
What are you going to say?
Did my face make you blush?
It did.
Okay, fair. Okay, can we first talk about what we're wearing? Very quickly, I'm so excited.
Thanks. You see, we're twins. We're already just...
We're totally morphing into each other.
We are morphing into each other.
No, but honestly, shout out to MOT. Thank you for dressing us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This is part of their new collection. Mm-hmm. Obviously, check out MOT website, Instagram, and get yourself a nice little piece. Okay, should we get into it? I love the fact we actually started with a brand.
Because we're talking about brands today.
I know. Mm-hmm. Do you think people would think we knew that was going to happen?
We didn't.
We actually didn't.
It was just coincidence.
But what I wanted to ask is, actually, with MOT, would you say they're niche or hyper-specific if we kind of just get straight into it?
Do you know what? I would say MOT is niche because of the way she uses fabric. You know, she doesn't...
Fair enough.
Unless she's doing collaboration, you're right. Everything is very structured and
so
simple.
Niche.
Yeah.
Brings me to my question. Have you noticed these days in a world of lots of products and brands out there, people are trying to define who they are as a brand. Mm-hmm. Some brands are becoming more focused and some brands are choosing to become more generalized. Yeah. And for me, I find it very fascinating because I start to ask myself some questions. I recently saw a video by Kelenta and she went in on the details of like one of her fabrics and she was talking about craftsmanship. She kept going on and on and on about it. And it made me think, okay, I think she's on a journey to try to carve out a niche for herself. So even though she sees herself as a fashion brand, I can tell from that video that she's trying to go on a journey. And that made me start thinking, like, how do we start to put brands in boxes? When are they generalized? When are they niche? And when are they hyper-specific? And which one works?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you say that because there are some, and this is my favorite example, there are some brands that are so hyper-specific that they almost, you know, they're leaders in the industry. Mm-hmm. And then... they get to a point where they become generic descriptors, right? So like...
Oh, yeah, like I see what you mean.
Do you know that it wasn't...
Every diaper brand is called Pampers.
It wasn't it wasn't until I got much older that I knew there was a brand called Pampers.
Oh, really?
I thought it was another word for diaper.
Oh.
Yeah, I just thought it was like the British word
for
diaper.
And do you know what? That's similar to Hoover.
Yes, exactly. We call all vacuum cleaners Hoover.
Hoover, yeah. But it's actually a brand that's called Hoover.
And I love it because they were so hyper-specific that they sort of became... They had like such, they lived in consumers' minds. So, you know, lost the word.
No, I get it. I completely get it. If you want to buy something, you now refer to that brand name.
Yeah.
As opposed to the category of the product you're trying to buy.
Because they have such brand awareness that everybody's thinking about them before the actual name of the brand.
Love. To dive deeper into this, we have an amazing guest with us today. Her name is Ayonda Carter. She's a branding and marketing expert and the CEO of Iroko Interiors. I'll let her introduce herself. Hi, Ayonda.
Hi, Ayonda. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I should say I'm honored because I hold you guys with such high regard.
Oh, thank you.
So, yes, my name is Ayonda Carter. I'm originally from Mozambique, South Africa. And I left South Africa to come to Nigeria at the age of 22. And I'm officially here between 16 and 18 years.
Wow.
So I call this home.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what do you do at the moment?
Okay, so at the moment, we're still focused majorly on turnkey projects for interior architecture. So we majorly focus on projects from construction phase up until the end. We focus on commercial, residential and hospitality projects.
Amazing.
And that's really because that's been my... should I call it hyper-specific or my niche for a very long time. And then, of course, it has evolved over the time. I've seen how the market's working. I've done my own feasibilities to see how saturated the markets have become. And then you just keep moving along from area to area. So that's my major part business. And then, of course, I've come up with Melanin Creatives. It's more of an academy, an online and an offline creative academy. And that was birthed out of the fact that I just had all this knowledge and experiences of traveling around the world and living in South Africa and being in this really diverse country. And I said, you know, what's the use of keeping all of this in when there's so many students and whether they're in school or industry professionals or intermediate professionals that want to come into the industry, and teaching them how to create their own niche, coming into the environment. And I think that would be more advantageous.
Whew. Yeah. That is, thank you. That was actually so interesting to hear. Yeah. And most importantly, interesting for me, because in this stage we're in, we've had a few topics around like human capital being a problem in a country like Nigeria and everybody kind of leaving. Yeah. So when you hear stories of people coming in, it's actually really exciting. Yeah, literally, and I want to ask, why Nigeria and what inspired that move?
Yeah, well, a very deep question. I think it took me time journeying on to discover that. Because coming from South Africa, I'm coming from a post-apartheid phase. Mm-hmm. So we're just coming out of apartheid. And we're kind of in this mindset that we'll work in a company for 40 years and then become the MD at the end. So our mindsets were kind of just kind of clogged in.
Yeah.
And being in that environment for so long, I was like, but I think there might be more out there. There has to be more out there somewhere. And because I was exposed, being in a job I was in, having different clients from Congo and Nigeria, and I was like, okay, but where is that on the map? Because crazy enough, when I explained to Nigerians that even in history for us at school, they cut off history when it came to African history. So we never got to know about any African countries helping us during the apartheid time. We never got to learn about the apartheid system. What? I managed to learn that when I got here. And Nigerians were like, do you know how we supported South Africans? I'm like, what do you mean? Let me check. Because we were not exposed to it.
Wow.
From primary school into high school was like cut off history because they didn't want to grow a resentment in us in high school there's a resentment.
Because then it would cause a potential rift in
SA amongst us. Because now at the time, selling of the Rainbow Nation was the branding of this, you know, we're selling a Rainbow Nation, so we need to live cohabit ourselves and also get used to the fact that our areas were quite segregated. So Igbos on one side, like Lekki would be cut up in four pieces and say, okay, Igbos here, Yorubas here, Hausas here. And that's how we actually, it's designed even now.
Wow.
So, and the crazy, you know, flip part of coming here, it was like, okay, I need to find where this country's on the map. And then my parents were very strict. And then my mom and dad were like, okay, just take a leap of faith, man. Just get on the Gau train, get on a flight. And
well, your parents said that?
Yeah, they did. I mean, my mom had to, at some point, you got to explore.
Yeah.
You can't just be here. Just go and explore.
That's amazing.
And so I got this opportunity during the World Cup. They were doing an air. Before that, actually, I had a project in Akure.
Okay.
For Elezade.
Oh, okay. That's where I'm from.
I did his village home.
Mommy.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, so he walked into our store and he said, oh, I just want everything like this in my room. And I was like, but where is this person from? Why is he looking so large? Like, you know, now how Nigerians would have this very confident.
Big person.
And it was really strange for me. I was like, where is this confidence coming from? This is so weird. Because I'm coming from a situation where we would be in a shop, right? And a white person comes in front of us and we keep quiet.
What? This is 20 years ago.
We keep quiet. There's no way we're going to even shout out. And then I meet a Nigerian and he's like, what?
Okay.
Yeah. You know?
The thing with Nigerians is we will not keep quiet. We might let you stay in front, but we'll be abusing you the entire time.
I think what you're saying is even more so intriguing to me because you're talking about 20 years ago.
Yes.
When in Nigeria, you know, we used to go to like Double Four and all our friends were white and, you know, we were just like talking to them and there was no reverence for white people at all.
Wow. Yes. So for us being, it was a really different experience. And then coming to Nigeria, I was just like, what is going on here? How can I meet people on a keke or in a bus and they're telling me they're coming to visit me in South Africa? How are you going to leave?
We're also so friendly for no reason.
In this heat and no AC, no anything, and you're telling me you're going to meet me in South Africa. And they used to call me after the project we came for. They'd call me, hi, madam. I was like, madam, I'm not even madam. Why are you calling me? Because we're not used to that. And so that cultural difference was like, wait a minute. I think I'm going to need to go back there some year soon. So I don't know how. I don't know, but I think I need to go back there. So when that opportunity came during the World Cup, and my parents were like, okay, I think just take the leap of faith and go. And yeah, I've not looked back.
Oh, I love that.
I've not looked back. It's crazy.
I am smiling from ear to ear.
Like, we could have, like, the problem is now I want to just hear talk more about this. Like,
not my topic anymore.
Wow, that's impressive.
This is so impressive. And more impressive for me, what I take out of it is also a point of reference.
Yes.
To a lot of people who are going through what you went through 16 years ago, they're going through it now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have in the pipeline about 7 friends who are currently trying to do the transition. They come to visit Nigeria, they go back and they feel empty and something is missing and they have a calling here and they can't explain it. So hearing you speak, I can finally understand where they're coming from. Because for a long time, I'm just like, oh, I hear how you feel, but I don't understand it fully. Yes,
most definitely. And the thing is, having to look at myself in a mirror image of being in South Africa and being here, and it's kind of feeling like, can I truly be me? Can you just put me completely unjudged, completely creative? Everything is possible, even in the midst of all the madness and craziness. Even here, you can still create something amazing that is your own. Back home, I think the most I wish for a lot of my people and brothers and sisters and younger people is just that belief you can have your own business. It's like, oh my goodness, you walk through supermarkets in Lagos, like in ShopRite. ShopRite, yes, was a South African brand, but all the products in ShopRite are Nigerian brands. Do you know how incredible that? It's all black owned.
Do you know that
Nigerians are fascinating you? I take for granted.
Nigerians are actually at our core some of the most entrepreneurial people.
We have the biggest startup hub in the world.
We do. We also have, like, when other African countries come to visit for whatever reason and they hear how many small businesses we have in the country, they're floored. Sometimes it is the population of their own country. Like, that is just the people. And you know, when I say entrepreneurial, it is that there are people selling ground, not outside. There are people who are selling, you know, fish and everything, because it's like, I just need to get by. And what I love about Nigeria, which a lot of us take for granted, it really allows you to start as a blank canvas, which is why you have so many people starting businesses. It doesn't matter if they're starting them well or successfully, they just have an entrepreneurial idea and they start it. Because this country encourages you to actually just have an idea and run with it. You know, and it varies in size or in scale. It can be as, you know, structured as possible. It can be as simple as possible. I need to feed my family. But it's so interesting when I meet people from other African countries and realize that that innate drive, Senegal, Ghana, and I love those countries for their culture and their infrastructure and their, but that spirit of entrepreneurship and drive and opportunity is not as prevalent as it is in Nigeria.
Oh, this is amazing. And no, like, I'm so thrown off in a good way.
Me too.
Like, I'm trying to figure out how to bring it back to this topic of branding, because I feel like we've you have to come back. Like, let's just put it that way for another topic entirely. But if we were to kind of really back in a bit, I want to ask, have you always, always known you were going to be in interior or in that
world? I always knew I was going to be in the arts and crafts. Used to do artwork. I used to hand paint, all of that. I've always known I'd be, and I'm coming from a very musical family. From Mozambique as well, my uncles, we wrote the national anthem. We had people in the Olympics. So everyone is quite creative in that aspect. And if you're a creative person in that aspect, you need the freedom to think and create. Even in the midst of madness and noise. So back home kind of made me hold my confidence. Like, you know, it kind of puts you in a realm to say, okay, I need to work somewhere before I can discover that I have this great talent or this great passion. And, you know, really your brand is really you. And for me, I kind of felt, how am I going to discover so many different parts of me being back home versus being here? Here, it is a blank canvas and it's saying to me, okay, take this brand of yours and discover what you are great at. And it makes you really research on things you never thought you'd look at before, like, you know, your logo and what do you think the quality theme would be. And now it makes you think in those very creative ways.
I get that.
Whereas I'm also coming from a very structured university kind of curriculum where everything was like, by the book, you had to. And then I come here and I meet creatives that have never studied interior design or never did graphic design. And they tell me, I learned graphic design. I'm teaching it to myself by myself. I'm like, how? You know, so it is quite a dynamic time in terms of branding and in terms of discovering yourself and creating the storytelling, you know, being in Nigeria for me.
No, thank you for that.
As someone who, and I was listening to you talk and I was relating it back to my own experience, because my foray into branding and marketing came off the back of, obviously in school, I studied international business, which covered the breadth of business. And then I started working and my interest came off the back of design. So I was very intrigued by how businesses presented themselves because I used to work conferences and I just was really interested with, you know, why would you choose that logo? Yeah. Like, why would you choose that to represent yourself? So then I taught myself how to design, like I taught myself graphic design.
She started her agency by herself. I just started it.
And then, and this leads me to my question I have for you was, because obviously you're an interior designer, so I started with graphic design. And then I was like, wait, I want to understand the strategy behind design. And I want to understand why brands position themselves in certain ways. And then marketing, obviously, you know, follows that. How do you get awareness? How do you, you know, find your right target audience? So you're an interior design professional, but you're also a branding and marketing expert.
Can you imagine?
So I can imagine, but I want to understand your journey to that and how you balance the two and how do they complement each other.
So like I said, the great part about being in, we call it a blank canvas, but there's so many things to inspire you being in Nigeria. Then Nigeria, I realized from South Africa, you think you go to London and the rest. It's like, oh, why do you have to go? Everything is at home. Then you get to Nigeria and you realize that you're traveling to 20, 30 countries from Nigeria. And then you realize that, look, the whole world globally is your stage. It really is your stage. So you benchmark yourself against that. And I stopped looking just inwardly and I said, okay, what's happening in Dubai? What's happening in New York? What's happening in LA? What's happening in Design Center? Okay, let me use those as my benchmark to assist me uplift and skill up my brand to where it's supposed to be. So sometimes people say, oh my gosh, Rocco has like 100 staff and it's just such a big company. And I'm like, we're only six. They're like, well, I said, because I always kept the benchmark really high. And then you also see the intriguing part is you're in Nigeria with a lot of other interested creatives. I don't even know they're creative. I'm like, oh, this person doesn't know they're creative. But they're already creative and they're creating something. And before you know it, a brand turns to a restaurant and turns to a coffee shop. And so because of that fluidity of saying that we're not so stuck in the profession to say, oh, you have to study to be a graphic designer, to do A, B, and C. Once you allow the fluidness of being creative, you can literally get into any niche that you
really love that. I love that answer because for someone who is on the journey to constantly understand brand intricately and the lifestyles of brand positioning, I guess I want to, you just mentioned something about the fluidity brands go through and how someone can start with one idea but fluidity through fluidity it changes, it morphs, it evolves. Now my question is, what would you say or how would you define the different brand positioning that is available to different people? So I want to start a business now. Should I be creating a brand that is a generalist? Should I be thinking of niche? Should I be thinking, let me focus? Or should I not have any of those thoughts as a starting point and let the fluidity take me somewhere? I'm wondering, what would you guys like?
I think it goes also, I'll use myself fully as, because initially coming into the interior design, I could have just kept it very broad perspective and said, I'm going to open a furniture store, I'd open an accessory store. And I really looked at the markets and I said, okay, fine, these markets are really building up in Sulawesi and on the mainland. believe it or not, you'd be thinking it's just in Lekki. There are people bringing in products from all over the world that are already here. But which specific market do you really want to go into?
Mm.
And then I realized, oh my goodness, there were clients here that had a lot of money. But you meet those that have a lot of money, but they are in control of the entire project. They're not going to even allow you your creative freedom to do so. And then I said, okay, fine, I'm going to amplify this bit more. I'm interested in materials. I want to see a space without furniture. What do you call that? A space that gives you a certain aura, whether I look at the flooring and the lighting and the ambience without furniture, what does that give me? So I now expanded my interior design aspect, as we called it, and I moved a bit more into construction to understand how it is the architect and the main contractor was trying to build the space. And because things move so fast in Nigeria, they may not be as detailed to say, okay, I want this house to give me this type of look and feel. But I would take it further and say, okay, the architect used these type of bay windows on the exterior. How can I allow certain lighting or certain flow into? So I now decided to choose a particular niche. And you know the funny thing is these niches go on the journey of your of the work you're doing. So even as a startup and you're trying to get into any environment of things, it really goes with the flow. It even goes with where you're hanging out or having a drink or chilling and say, okay, you know what, I think this idea is leading me to this. Oh, I had a great conversation today about A, B and C. I think that could lead me into a different realm of my creativity. So I started evolving. I said, okay, fine, my market at that time when I first came, people were like, What do you mean interior design? Decorator.
We do like
when does we don't like big we words. We really cannot stand it.
Because we had focused so much on interior design, like we were doing drawings. We're doing actual interior drawings. We're not just sitting and doing choosing tables and chairs. I'm like, we're not doing decorating, we're doing interior design. So it starts from those conversations, starts giving you a certain niche. You say, okay, this is the type of, this is who I want to deal with.
So you start getting spit. You know, I like that.
And as we keep moving, it's like, okay, no, I want to just deal with commercial projects. Which projects do I really want to look for? And then you start going in the industry and start looking, okay, I want to go to Kappa Alberta and say, look, this is what I want to focus on. And then now I'm so big into hospitality projects. And I'm like, okay, I want to do hotels. And in the hotel niche, that's the amazing part about Nigeria. You know, because if you're in the UK right now and you thought you were just going to move from an interior design firm,
nobody's going to give you the opportunity
residential base
to very long time.
Hospitality and say, this is, we don't do that. No, we don't do that. In Nigeria, my.
The clients might be the one that asks you. They're like, oh, you did that house, come. My restaurant, I want it to look like this space.
And before you know it, you're jumping into an area that just says, okay, just give me 1 week. You know what? Just give me 1 week. I'm going to do my research.
And I'll get it done.
Yes. You know.
Okay. So what I took from that is the fact that perhaps maybe not every brand or entrepreneur wakes up and has a clear definition of if their brand will end up generalist, niche, or hyper-specific. However, what I heard from you, though, is as you do go on that journey, you have to be defining it as you go along. So you cannot still leave it open-ended.
Totally
you should still
not.
Be clear.
Yes.
Can we do a quick rapid exercise? I want to know what if you think your business is hyper-specific niche or a generalist brand. And Ayanda as well. I mean, you already hinted that yours was
it's a niche. And I was listening to Ayanda and I was thinking, you know, you're completely right about being able to be dynamic, especially in a place like Nigeria, right? Mine was a journey. It started off hyper-specific because, like I said, it was just graphic design. And then I decided to open it up to things that accompany graphic design, like web design and digital marketing and social media. But it was niche because I, at the time, I decided that I only wanted to help female-owned businesses that were small. Because when I started, almost all graphic designers were men. Almost all web designers were men or owned by men. There were not a lot of people serving women. I had a lot of women. A lot of my first clients were women who came to me to be like, this man designed my logo and it looks like it's a construction company. But actually, I'm a fashion designer. So then it became niche. It was women. I really wanted to work with women. And there's some women who I've worked with today that I still have relationships with. But then as we grew, and then like Toby was saying, somebody will call you and say, you know, I know you can do this like commercial project, or I know you can do this corporate project. And I'm like, I don't know. I've only ever done lifestyle. So we expanded. So now I would say that we are generalized actually now, because there isn't anyone that can approach us that we wouldn't be able to service. So small enterprises, large enterprises, corporates, FMCGs, women, men, but it started hyper specific. And I think that was necessary for my journey to growth, right? When I started it, I thought it was going to be hyper specific. I'm just going to be a graphic designer forever. But then the needs of the market and the needs of my clients and of the consumers dictated that I transition from hyper specific to niche to general. But that's also because I'm in a service based industry, so it's easy for me to do that.
Ooh, I feel like I'm back in school today. I would say I'm probably niche. Then again, I would ask a question of where anyone would place the hospitality industry. So it's a restaurant. Our goal is to give experiences, food, drinks, service, and we do that over and over and over again. So I'd say probably niche, because our goal is not to deviate from that. I mean, we'll do other things. You do activations, you do events, but they're still all narrowed down to just that experience for the person. So I'd say niche. Yeah, I'd say a lot of the ideas in my head are even probably niche and generalist.
Can I ask you something about the hospitality industry? Because as you were saying it, I was like, I'm also learning. So within, so the hospitality industry itself is niche because it's, you know, quite, you know, but then, you know, there are some, if there was a restaurant who did one type of food, so Yo Sushi, they do just sushi.
I'd probably say they're hyper specific because they only do serve sushi. What would you say? I would.
Only,
It's only sushi. It's only sushi. They don't want anything else.
Yeah. So, so that, so then there are niche restaurants, but then within, I mean, there are niche restaurants, but they're hyper-specific
ones within. As well, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So interesting. I don't know where I would put a coffee shop.
Like a Starbucks, right?
Yeah. You know, it's the crazy and fantastic part, again, about being in Nigeria is you could literally say this is a sushi restaurant in Nigeria. We bring in a brand and before you know it, give it 6 months. I think they, again, they start conceptualizing.
There will be jollof sushi.
There'll be jollof sushi.
Before you know
it. I have seen jollof sushi. Yes. There's a restaurant. I don't know if you're listening to this. I know you exist. There's jollof sushi somewhere in this country.
Okay. I froze. But the truth is, I want to try it.
Yes. I was
but
intrigued.
I froze. Did you try it?
I mean, it didn't taste like sushi. It was just like a roll. Yeah. But it was
I also tried an egusi pasta.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it good?
It was actually surprisingly really good.
Okay.
Yes, it's very difficult to say so. But like I said, in such a niche market, like it turns from niche to really general.
Yeah.
Things change.
Yeah.
And the, your environment
and consumer behavior changes.
And the great thing is that actually there's no rule.
There is.
There are no rules.
And it makes me want to ask, do we think hyper specific brands work?
They work for a particular period of time. I think that we're in an evolving part of the world right now. We're always transitioning in decisions about currency and economies. We are transitioning, literally what we have this morning is different to the afternoon.
So if I was to answer that question, I would say a hyper specific brand can work. However, I would assume that their capital might need to be a little bit intensive because the work they have to do to produce that product or service to do exactly what it says on the tin over and over and over again without deviating. I think that's the first characteristics I would say for a brand that would work. Another reason I would say a hyper-specific brand can work is if it genuinely focuses and never
deviates,
is tempted. You cannot want to be a hyper-specific brand and think it will work if
your eyes are
temptation is going to enter the story. So I don't know if they work. I think they can work. I just think the work is a lot.
You know, as you say that, it is interesting because for me, someone like somebody who's interested in marketing and messaging and comms, I feel like the work is harder when your brand is hyper-specific, your comms, because like you said, the consumers evolve, the economy evolves, but you have one product and you've had one product
and it doesn't
and you must
matter.
Continue to let the people know that this product delivers. If your hyper-specific product is you know, luxury, and then suddenly people have lower spending power.
Like
you
what
have
happened to keep, in the devaluation yes, of the naira.
You have to keep your messaging clear, because if you then follow the market, mm-hmm. you are no longer hyper specific. You've lost your strategy. So I find it harder to not have any room for deviation. Yeah. To
as so hard as it sounds, there's also an attraction to it. Imagine in your business and in your business, you had one thing.
Yes.
And that's your only job every day.
It's good for your supply chain, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it builds, you would be surprised, it might build a stronger connection, because then you're focused on one message mm-hmm. forever, day in, day out, day in, day out.
It's possible.
Yeah. Another thing I realized that it does is you already said it makes marketing easier.
Easier.
But I don't know if I still want a hyper-specific brand.
For me, it makes it easier with the messaging, but harder in the execution, just because I never know what's going to happen. I also don't think I could ever want a hyper-specific brand.
I like the totality of a human being.
Yeah.
I like how people change their mind. I love when I look at my data and we have, like, our sales for smoky jollof or seafood pasta has reduced. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
What's happening? Is it raining more? As kids are home on half term, so parents are stressed. What's going on? Why? Mm-hmm. And then when I figure it out and I fix it, I'm like, all is well in the world again.
Yeah. Do you know?
Or when I have to come up with something new because something is not working anymore. Yeah, and it's like, no,
see,
why?
You're adapting. What's going on?
I love that.
And for me, it's the same, because you just gave an example, and I would love to hear from you in your industry, right? Because especially with interior design and different aesthetics. But for me, imagine if I was hyper-specific and then a huge disruption, which happens periodically, like AI.
Oh, yes.
And then I'm out of a business.
Yes.
Completely and 100% out of a business. Because right now we are pivoting away from typical design. We're moving more to strategy and like very, very specific
things
design.
That the computer,
that
can
the computer
never
can't do.
Do.
Because the reality is that this is the new industrial revolution or the new technology, the digital revolution that is happening right now. Yes. If I had a specific brand that did one thing, I probably would be a bit stretched right now. So,
and in saying that, I remembered when COVID hit, I was only 2 years in business.
Yeah.
And when COVID hit, the business I set up became the first danger to society. Because now you don't want anyone coming to socialize. So everything I had thought was gone. So I now had to develop new things within the business.
Yeah.
So if it was hyper-specific, that would have been the end.
Yes. What about you? What do you like in your industry? Do you think it's even possible to be like a hyper-specific business?
Yes, I do think so. I think for those that I've really experienced, especially in the commercials, they want to just do commercials. Mm-hmm. And there's really high big companies coming into Nigeria, and they say, oh, we only want to deal with only 3 or 4 interior design companies, and they only specifically deal with commercial.
Does that eliminate you?
It does, because I've broadened mine. I've already moved from hyper-specific even to a broader perspective. And the reason I did that is because not all in our industry are very dynamic to move between contemporary, modern, and classic that easily. But over time, if you're open enough to want to do so, then yes. Mm-hmm. But other companies, that's it. I just do commercials and that's it. And they make their profits and they're happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, because the industries are constantly changing, and people are becoming more aware, and you just pick up a Pinterest and say, I want this couch, I want this chair, I want this. It's opening a new diversity in everyone else is now also the decorators of their own personal spaces. So it becomes that it's an interesting time, and that's why I'm welcoming of it. Said, by under this person hasn't got a degree in interior design. I said, hey, man, we're in Nigeria now. Someone can just say to you today, I want you to have this look and feel, and you see them start to go to the markets themselves. Mm-hmm. Is that the type of business I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
No, not anymore. Is that what inspires me? No, not anymore. Because in our type of line of work, our idea is to create something new out of what it is. So if I want to get a particular wood, I want to manipulate that wood at least 3-4 times to make it something new. That's really what we're supposed to do. But because the market says there's your HDF boards, choose A, B, or C, and then the end client says that's what it is.
Yes,
it's far from that in reality to what it's supposed to be. We're actually supposed to manipulate it to be something
so new, so that you have new ranges. Yes. Oh, that is interesting. Mm-hmm. And do things like that inspire you to realize that you have more room to create and even make yourself more of a niche?
Yes.
I was going to say.
And the more interest is that now you get a lot more business outside of Nigeria. Because, okay, you're based there, but can you come to Rwanda, please, and do a consult for us? Or come to Kenya. I think we're looking for a different look and feel.
Yeah.
And it really allows you to start to bring that diversity. I can bring it. So for me, a lot of my design work is more of an eclectic style where I have pieces that are modern, some are classical, some are, so it's a mixture of different genres.
So you mix to create season and green.
Exactly.
Like to bring it.
You know.
It makes me, I forgot what I was going to ask. I was going to ask something. It'll come to me.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come to me. Perfect. I got it. I was going to ask, do you feel like the environment also dictates? What do I mean by that? When you're in a developing country, the opportunities are so wild, the market is so unrefined, and there's so many untapped opportunities that a lot of people will struggle to create hyper-specifics. While when you go to a saturated market, a lot of things already exist. So when you focus, you might be able to even find success quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is that a thing or did I just make that up?
No. So as you were asking the question, I was thinking about some of those brands that we had talked about in the beginning that were hyper-specific, right? I feel like a lot of hyper-specific brands that exist today, maybe the ones that are have gone past the generations, they probably were born out of a need. So you mentioned developing markets or like established or developed economies. Some of those brands probably developed out of a need. So perhaps there was no such thing as disposable single tissues at the time. And then Kleenex was able to come in and create a product that, because it was the only one of its type, before then maybe competitors came in and replicated that business, it was able to create such a hyper-specificity. So I definitely think that your environment, like,
it dictates
and it offers opportunities or maybe blocks opportunities. Yeah. Like right now in America, it probably will be very hard to create something hyper-specific simply because it's such a competitive market.
Market,
compared to maybe other markets that, like, have more opportunities.
Like Europe or something. Because when Ayanda was speaking and she was talking about how she keeps referencing her excitement and the opportunities that are right in front of her, which makes it difficult for her to go and decide, I'm going to focus on one thing because the landscape itself needs many solutions at this current period. So, yeah, it made me think. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if all of us are, whether we realize it or not, we're all in the same position where a lot of entrepreneurs in Nigeria or Lagos at the moment, we find ourselves, majority of us, in a more generalist/niche industry.
Because you're looking for customers. And the thing is, you're more likely to broaden your customer base and increase your revenues if you service more than one particular segment. It just, I think for most people, it's good business practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
What you also said about hyper-specific brands coming from a need, I would like to unpack that. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, some of the food we eat or some things, like some of our canned food, it didn't come because somebody sat there and said, I want to preserve food.
Mm-hmm.
It came from war situations where they had to create food in like preserved states for people to keep. Then supermarkets, the corner stores actually started from post-World War as well, where they needed groceries and food and services to be closer
to the camps
and the refugee camps. So I say that to say something like tissue, like all those specific things, I feel like talking, are they born out of a need, which is why they're so specific.
And supermarkets as well. So normally when we design supermarkets, there's a specific flow. So when you enter the supermarket, everything on the outer edges is fresh.
Interesting.
And everything in the aisles is canned or pre-packed. And they always say all the things in between the aisles are all the things that are not healthy. So try to stick on the outer.
That. Okay.
So we know that from a design perspective that you have your fresh vegetables, you have your bread, you have the meat at the back. Then you move through, you get your detergents, you move through, you get your animal food, you come to the front, and that's pretty much it. So we design it specifically in ways like that because we also want you to buy more. So we intentionally make the trolleys bigger, which you don't know. and then we want you to stand in the queues, and then your eye wanders.
To keep seeing other
and
things.
And you're bored, and oh, I'm thirsty. I think I'm thirsty. I can see a cold Coke. There's a fridge here. So you'd open and
I
have
love
something
the,
there.
The fridges at the aisle, at the tills.
It's like, all intentional.
I didn't want a Coke, but now I get one,
yeah,
you know.
It's all intentional. And then, of course, we want you to use your last pennies.
Mm-hmm.
Buy all
the bag, the string gum.
All the things we think you need.
Yeah. So don't walk out with any spare change.
Yeah.
Leave it here.
Yeah. That's the idea.
Yeah, I love that. So I really, really like that profound thing. Mm. Like, so a lot of hyper-specific brands. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that brings me to think, that means what industries have to be hyper-specific?
Mm.
That's a bit of a jam question. I don't even know the answer myself, because I feel like most industries can benefit from being generalist or niche.
Yeah.
But what industries do we think have to be hyper-specific? Maybe health?
Health and okay. Some food as well.
I would say food.
Yeah.
Pure water.
Sure.
Just water. Pure water. Yeah. I'm not even going to say
water. Have to be specific.
Yeah. Definitely.
Interestingly enough, I feel like this brand...
Or,
yeah, like
and
brands,
they are hyper,
fitness.
They are hyper-specific.
Fitness brand.
They only make one
have
product.
To be.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hyper-specific. Yes. Like when you think about it, I don't know.
So when I think that within an industry or within, like when you said health, I immediately thought about mother and baby.
Yes.
Those,
they have
those,
to be hyper-specific.
Because there are, in their regulations they have to follow, their health and safety checks they have to do. But I kind
but
of
guess
feel,
what? Born out of a need.
Born out of a need.
Because
mm-hmm.
some of our... Our services are not needs.
Yes.
Like, you don't necessarily have to go to a restaurant.
Yes, exactly.
You don't necessarily have to hire an interior person.
Yes.
You don't necessarily have to, you don't have to start a business and want to rebrand.
Yeah.
But people who have babies need to.
They need to, like, take care
feed
of them.
Feed them.
And make sure they live. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Formula is probably very hyper-specific.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's
like,
an...
Very, very hyper-specific.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a hyper-specific industry, actually.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very. Security? Am I going too far?
No, I think there's a way to... When you say security...
I don't know. I don't ask me, because when I threw out there, I was like, let me just throw another like important
call,
sector
would you
out.
You call like... No, is this an industry? Maybe like the legal industry? It has to be hyper-specific because they're following... You,
Ayanda said something earlier about service industry. Would we say service industry is niche or hyper-specific? Or are they just uncategorized?
It depends. So I think some. I think most are niche, but many
service,
are general.
I mean, if in the law, in the environment of law, it's really service-based.
Yeah.
And it's very hyper-specific.
Surgery.
Extremely.
Yes.
Surgery. Well, like you said, healthcare.
Yeah.
But like some are more hyper-specific
than others.
Because
you have surgeons who only are bone surgeons.
Brain.
They are not touching anything.
Yeah.
Anesthesia.
Those guys, I've never met people who just stand around and their only job is to drug
you.
You
know, they make a ton of money.
Exactly.
They're like
are
the richest.
Very
well? Like the
are
richest
you telling
decisions.
Me? I paid one $2,000 just to stand there.
Yeah.
Pum, pum, and just be watching.
Yeah.
That's all he did. The guy cycled to my surgery.
Wow.
Casually.
I love it for
and
him.
He was just like, oh, after this, I'm just going to have lunch. I was like, cool on you. I'm just going to be lying in bed.
Trying to wake up.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. And then do we have examples of brand? What I'm trying to do is use examples to kind of clear it up a bit, because it is quite intertwined, isn't
it?
It is. And I want people to walk away being able to know that my brand is this, my brand is this, or my brand is this,
or
I'm evolving, or I'm constantly jumping sheep. Because I feel like the strategies to employ for the different pockets are different.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So people should know, right? So niche brands, hyper-specific brands that we can think of? I know we've mentioned some. You said pocket tissue.
Yeah,
that's
so that's hyper-specific. Yeah,
very
you said Hoover is hyper-specific too. They only make vacuums to this day.
And their only job is to clean floors.
To clean floors. There's nothing else you can do with
there's nothing else. Niche brands, where would we say a brand like GIG Logistics is?
I would say it's niche.
Why?
So while they provide a particular service, which is niche because they have their specific consumers, but they have different types of logistics within GIG, right?
Fair enough.
So it's not like
it's
just,
still logistics.
It's not just like we only deliver food. They deliver many different things.
So it's not hyper-specific, it's more niche. What about a brand like...
You know which one we were debating inside Fenty Beauty? And, you know, we had, like, different opinions.
I feel like most beauty brands will be niche. I don't think I would put them as generalist or hyper-specific. What would you say?
They are starting to go into areas we didn't expect. The next thing they'll tell us about spandex. Next thing they'll tell us about swimwear. You know, because, we're launching a new collection. Like, when did this come up? Oh, they just decided.
Okay, I see the question. Fenty Beauty is niche.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Fenty brand is seeming like a generalist brand generally.
They have different, like...
So that brings me to another thing. Does that mean that a group, that a company can have a group and then have different things underneath it?
Yes, definitely. It's like asking if LVMH is generalist or niche
Generalist.
They're generalist because they have different types of brands.
But would we be analyzing LVMH or would we be analyzing the brands under LVMH? Because I don't think we can even call LVMH a brand.
So
can we? It's a group of companies.
It's a brand on its own, and then it's also a group of companies. But you know, a good one. And you're right, because LVMH is so varied, and they have different types. They have mass market. Clothes, they have luxury. Drinks, exactly. They have different brands in different segments. Mm-hmm. Different like whether it's luxury, mass market, prestige. Mm-hmm. But one could be, I don't know what brands they own, but you know, GlaxoSmithKline.
Ooh.
They seem to only own consumer products that are in line with health and beauty. I may be wrong. They may own a food brand. I don't know. Because, you know, all of these brands diversify. But initially, it was just toothpaste.
That fascinates me.
So it's niche, but like specific niche. Because they won't own like a clothing brand. They wouldn't stick to like healthcare consumer goods.
Yeah.
So I think it's, like I said, in this dynamic time, you know, we focused so much on the clothing brands. Mm-hmm. You have Gucci, you have Louis Vuitton, you have all these specific ways of saying I'm in fashion and that's it. But the part that has really transformed in the last 2 years, if you go to Milan now, you find all the clothing brands are now making furniture.
Yes, I've noticed that. That's a big thing now.
So they've like tied the conceptual, like, Gucci has too.
Not just accessories. Like, No.
They're actually making couches, tables. They're designing spaces now.
So they're tying the fashion industry and the clothing, the fabrics, the design conceptually into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have maybe a specific living room that is like just blood red velvet look and feel, and that's a Louis Vuitton look. You know, so they've come so strongly brand wise into the home that and then they've taken that from the home and taken it into the restaurants.
You noticed a lot of them are also opening restaurants?
Yes,
there's a Prada cafe, there's a Dior cafe in Cannes, there's the LVMH.
But they're seeing the need for the transition, because now to get people to totally trust their hyper-specific brand of their clothing.
I need to experience you in another way.
And trying to understand China as to Italy, and you're telling me my bag's made in Italy, and is it made in China? So to have that trust again,
you know,
you need to be fluid into the next.
This brings up a conversation about what you just said, because you said they're a specific brand, but they want their consumers to experience them in non-specific ways.
Yes.
So is it that they know at their core, this is what we stand for, this is our brand, but we're going to have activations, we're going to have experiences.
I feel like, I love that question, because I feel like that's one of my biggest journeys with brand at the moment. I feel like we are going through a brand evolution, generally, or brand
revolution.
Revolution, that's the word, thank you. Or a redefining of what brands means. Mm-hmm. What do I say to that? Even a brand like Hermès before, who never say anything, they don't have to talk, will end up opening
a cafe
flat
or something.
Or a cafe soon, and you're like, okay, I don't really see you as hyper-specific anymore.
Yeah.
And I'll see you as potentially trying to play a niche
or
wanting to be more generalist because you want to take over other parts of my life.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
That's part of the lifestyle part.
And that is the lifestyle. So I wonder if there's a revolution happening where most brands, except the ones that are very industry-specific, will struggle to actually stay hyper-specific. Even your doctors are now online dancing.
You're right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know,
I'm talking to you about your health.
What we've actually, the journey we've gone through today has made me think that people are moving in droves away from hyper specificity. It's like,
think so.
It doesn't work for brands in general, because then you're not meeting your customers at every touch point. Because now that's another thing brands are trying to do, is meet everybody everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas before I would have experienced you in the store, now I'm seeing you in the airport, I'm seeing you in the restaurant, I'm seeing you in a cafe. They're always doing activations. Visions. They're always doing things to draw their customers to them. Even
and
though
the
maybe,
influencers, yes, the way they have.
So maybe there is no such thing as a hyper-specific brand anymore.
Or we're going on the journey to
moving away from it.
Because even I was very surprised at the, I don't know if it's real, there was a GWAG advert I saw online about this white man in a denim jacket, which is very unlike that brand. And he had no tie, very casual, and he was using a lot of slangs to describe the car, and he was trying to appeal to women. So he said, it was, don't quote me, so it's little things like, the seats are given right, we'll customize it for you. The foot mat, of course you can customize it. You and your girls can have your initials on it. The color, girl, I can cut. Like, he was using certain bit was walking around. It's so not typical. And I thought, I want one.
No, they're, I'll see, they're take all a G-Wag. Diversifying their messaging.
But everybody is kind, and it comes back to your point where you talk about the excitement of being here in the morning and thinking, but I can also shift here, and I can shift here, and I can shift here.
For me, I feel like I'm in a candy store every time. Something, we don't know what's going to come out, but something's going to come out.
But you know, exciting, because I think that's how brand and branding should be.
Yeah, it's evolving into it, and that's why the transition of it all is, you know, at the end of the day, the brand is what you have to trust. And there's a hyper specific brand, you trust it with them. You just know this is where I'm going to get it. But now if you're bringing it into my home where I can sleep and eat and go out to a restaurant, but you're also making me feel like I need to be a member to go into that branded store or restaurant, is you still keeping the norms and the respects of being in the store itself, buying the product and still coming out and eating around the product, sitting on it, feeling it, you know. So they taking all the senses of lifestyle around you to say, okay, fine, I do want to have a Louis Vuitton couch in my house. Why not? I mean, I already have it on my shoulder when I go out, but I might as well sit on it in my
house.
They're
working you.
You know, and I think they've worked, they've started to see that the it's evolving. People are changing. People are becoming a lot more exposed. People want to reproduce by themselves. How do you keep the trust with the brand and keep it hyper-specific for as long as possible? And how can we catch you down the road to make sure that you still bring you back to say, but this is still my really great branded bag. I still need to have it, you know.
I love that.
It's a dynamic time.
Yeah. What's next for you? Your excitement excites me. So I'm like, candy store, like, what's next? Are you opening a candy supermarket next? I'm drinking, but like, what's next?
There's a few things. First and foremost, I'm really interested in the book. And I know I didn't say, I said I would not mention that at this point, but it's not really a book to, and I found that people, they read and not read.
I agree.
Feel that people, when they're in a workbook situation, then it's a different experience. Like I said, with experiences, they change. And I've been going to so many different universities and getting so much feedback from people, and I realize that this, I have the confidence, but I don't know what to do. Guide me. Can I write it down or scribble it? Can you put it in a word book with a language that resonates with me? So we're speaking English now, but there's the Gen Z English that we need to get to. And there's pigeon English. You can't speak it. So you know exactly what I mean. We're millennials, and we're looking at them like, what did you just say?
To be honest, there's also cultural English. Sometimes we try to speak to Nigerians with English we learned from the West. As there's also that problem too.
But in South Africa, now you find a lot more black people speak English way better than white people.
100%
You say 100% Before they will say, oh, look at you. They used to call us Oreos. You're an Oreo.
Well, because you're white on the inside.
Yes. Because we speak English. So, but you forced us, you indoctrinated us into it. And we put our languages aside and made sure your language came first. So what else could we do? You know,
our children are at risk of all our languages being eradicated. For real.
So interesting times.
Well done. Do you have any, on your journey with Brandon, what advice would you have for people who are starting up, and in terms of, you seem like you've understood, you've moved to Nigeria, you knew what you wanted, you went on the journey, you positioned. How should people think through positioning their new business and brand?
Like, I think the one thing I've kept consistent is I've kept to my profession consistent. I've been dynamic around it, but I've still stuck to my interior architecture throughout.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So even if I decide I want to do and go into a commercial part of the business or to retail, I still kind of kept to my niche. So I think it's also important first keep to what you really like to do first and try and make that work in the midst and evolve that.
Fantastic.
Build that up before you start jumping to other things that
I really like that.
So you at least have a starting point. You always still come back to a starting point.
Okay.
You know,
now that actually also mirrors what you said, that you started with graphics.
And then yes. I moved.
But you it's knew so what you wanted first. If you had thought about, I'm going to start an agency, I wonder how daunting
and far,
you would have gone quickly. But because you started with something you like, then you kind of just kept adding to it.
Mm.
And for people who don't want to do that, what should they do? People who want to start with like they have all of these ideas in their head and they want to kick off hard.
To be honest,
more than one.
Distraction tends to not keep you focused on the success of that idea.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that even if you come up with something, you want it to be successful before you come up with the second and third and fourth one. And being distracted in that type of environment, like here, and you want to open 4 or 5 brands, it needs time to grow. You know, you need to still test it in the market and know whether it's going to stay as a general brand or would it stay as a hyper specific, because you have to listen to the market. Your customer is number one.
Yeah.
You know, and your customer would give you feedback over time on whether the direction of that is still in business or not.
Yeah.
So the success of that concept is very important. At least let it be stable. You know, that it's making money enough to deviate into the next conceptual idea.
Completely agree with that, because even with the restaurant, it was very important. I just stuck to 3 things: food, drink, service. Every other thing was not my focus. Obviously, still give a great space, still give great shisha, but I didn't. The first three things I was going to use to draw people in were the focus. Then built everything else from there. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
Ah, this was fun.
It was fun.
And like you came in hot in the beginning. Like
the excitement, like that first segment, we didn't plan for it. We didn't think about it, but we were so.
Have you had fun?
Locked in.
I've had a lot of fun. I'm just happy that I'm finally speaking out. You know, you kind of feel.
Oh, I love that.
Because it's no use keeping these experiences to you. We already, you know, coming of age, and you feel like there's so much impact to give back.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you want people to resonate with it. So, you know, even back home, I'm like, oh my goodness, if I can just go for Sloras, and then, you know, they could just hear what it is that we're doing in Nigeria. It will give them a different perspective.
Absolutely. You get this clip so you can put it
totally
wherever you want to, so that you're South African.
I'm firstly going to my universities first.
Yeah.
I need to go back to our universities.
I love that. Why are you so passionate about passing the baton? Because you've said a few times how all this knowledge you have, like you don't understand why it's being kept, and it's making me smile because a lot of us think it, but we're so exhausted. It's like, when am I going to find the time? But you almost keep it in a thread of to do.
Yes.
That I must keep. Yes, I'm busy doing all this, but this is just as important.
So where I come from in Mozambique, I've been fortunate enough to know like my forefathers before me. So I know generationally where I'm coming from.
Mm.
And I've carried that with me from there even to South Africa and even here. And I've always said wherever I am that I'm making a difference and an impact, it has to drive forth.
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, these kids need to, now that people are so proud, so confidently proud of where they are, it's easy to stand up to anybody else and say, hey, the tables have turned. I realize my worth. I realize I actually own this gold and this oil. And, you know, because you start to realize that the other time you didn't know if you should be proud of who you are or proud of what you had. And I grew up in that era where I remember having my short hair and it was curly as it was. But should I be proud of my hair being curly and natural at the time? Because I'm mixed race in South Africa with colored people and black people. Mm. And I'm, oh, I know, I'm sure you've heard of that a few times. Yeah. And then you deal with it. My color size, like, your hair is not straight enough. And then you go to the black side, you're definitely black because your hair is curly. Mm-hmm. You know, so we became so conscious of ourselves over time that I said, wherever it is I would be, even with my kids, I would drive through the same baton through and through, because what's the use of keeping it in?
Yeah.
You know, we have to keep moving, and these kids need to run Africa as strongly off of us. You know, so it's quite deep for me.
That's why I had to ask that.
Yeah.
It's quite deep for me.
I think what we've taken away, or what I've taken away from this conversation, is interesting, because I love when we have guests who challenge us to think differently from what we already, we walk into the studio and we have a way that we want to ask you questions, and then you guide us on a different journey. One, the excitement for me has almost reignited
my own excitement passion.
Because I do sometimes it becomes like I'm a hamster on a wheel. I'm just going through the motions. I'm just, you know, doing what I need to do. You came in with a lot of excitement, even though you've been doing this for over a decade, just like with the rest of us. But that ability to identify different opportunities and ways for you to evolve, I think is also a very necessary feeling for a lot of people listening and watching, because you do lose sight of the fact that you can evolve. You are not a tree.
Literally.
You are not planted in one place, you know?
Yeah.
And then the second thing I took away from it also was the need to continuously tell your story, right?
Definitely.
So, you know, it's a podcast, so you know, we're talking and we're giving advice and we're offering value, but I really love that self, you know, that need internally that it seems to me for you to tell people your story and like why you came, what your motivations were. And I just love that for us, and I love that we were able to experience that with you today.
No, thank you. You've really inspired me today, honestly. I am a big believer of developing. I don't think you can truly be successful unless I say it. For every year of your success, if 10 people have not benefited from it, like, I don't. So I actually go out of my way to make sure each year 10 people have gotten something from me that they've used to set up something else. So, but hearing you speak today, like, I am so inspired to make sure I'm deeper on that journey, more conscious of that journey, and more excited by that journey. I've never met anyone like you. Your excitement to give back is
I mean,
wild.
Nigeria's given me pepe, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no, of course, standard. That is
I mean, there's times I remember speaking to a therapist once. She's like, oh my God, don't you think you'll just move back to South Africa? I just listened to her on the phone. I said, moved back to where?
Now, let me stay in this jungle. Let's keep
this This challenge is not going to defeat me.
Yeah,
of course. I love that.
And I think the major part also for me is where I'm coming from. I'm very black woman, pro-black woman.
Love
so
it.
Much. And we have so much to prove. And back home, I even have, you know how it is. We have like 1,000% more to prove.
Yes.
Which we shouldn't have to, but unfortunately.
We do,
And back home, it's the same thing. It's like, okay, she's black, she's and she's leaving. And she chose Nigeria.
What life?
Why would she just decide to go to, you know?
Yeah.
But I like that. I like that you did. And I also like that you offered a positive perspective to moving to Nigeria. Like you were saying, you have so many friends. It's amazing when we meet people who not only move back, but move back with joy.
Yeah,
I cannot wait to share this episode.
Me too.
Honestly, this has been so fun. I learned a lot on this episode. I'm really excited for you guys to watch this. Thank you for listening today.
Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.